Oh, there, I
She's a
hear her.
popular candidate.
I'm okay. 15 seconds to talk to Lynn. Lynn, can you
Okay,
hear
I'm
me?
not going to move.
Lynn,
Amanda,
can you?
hi.
Hi, I hear you. Everybody hearing Lynn?
Hi, Lynn.
Yeah, I can hear her.
Hi,
Yeah,
everyone.
turn this up, I think.
She is a little difficult to hear. I hear her. Not great, but I hear her.
You sent Patty out.
I think that.
Good evening, and thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Amanda Vinicky. He's back, he's emboldened, and he's been busy.
I return to the presidency confident and optimistic that we are at the start of a thrilling new era of national success. A tide of change is sweeping the country.
President Donald Trump wastes no time using his office to pardon supporters who stormed the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. He's also following through on campaign pledges to force out undocumented immigrants. Just today, CPS says federal agents tried to enter an elementary school, but ICE says it wasn't them. The threat of raids has Chicago on alert.
We are not going to interfere, but we certainly are not going to cooperate with that type of abhorrent behavior.
We should think very carefully about what immigration means to this country. It is what we were founded upon.
Trump's bid to end birthright citizenship is on hold as states, including Illinois, sue. Before handing over the reins to Trump, President Joe Biden pardons Illinois Congressman Adam Kinzinger. Meanwhile, former Speaker Michael Madigan's corruption trial's nearing the end. Planned Parenthood is closing clinics, and the Bears hire a new head coach.
And now to our Week in Review panel. Joining us are Danny Halopoulos of WBEZ, Brendan Pope of WCIU, Olivia Olander of the Chicago Tribune, and from Washington, D.C., Lynn Sweet from the Chicago Sun-Times. Thanks to each of you. And Brendan, I'm going to start with you on this evolving news. Chicago Public Schools said that ICE agents tried to get into a school on the southwest side. They were denied. But then Immigration and Customs Enforcement says, no, it wasn't us. What is going on?
Yeah, a lot of he said, she said. So around 1 o'clock, CPS reported that ICE agents tried to get into Hamline Elementary School in the back of the yards neighborhood. Now the U.S. Secret Service saying that was actually them, that were their agents that were actually there for a pending investigation, something involving TikTok and teenagers. That part we got to dig more into. ICE says they were not involved. However, CPS CEO Pedro Martinez went on MSNBC around 2 o'clock and said it was ICE agents and said that his staff were shown ICE badges by whoever showed up to Hamline Elementary School. So obviously it just shows, as we try to figure out who said what, who did what, A lot of tension, a lot of fear rising on this day.
Yeah, so an evolving situation. Olivia, mm-hmm. do you have anything, because the Tribune has been reporting on this as well?
Yeah, we've had multiple reporters out at the elementary school in the back of the yards pretty much since this started to break today. I think it really just all goes to show, like Brandon said, like all the tension around this. We've sort of been waiting for some kind of a big, loud immigration enforcement action to come from the Trump administration, because that's something that they've specifically sort of threatened on Chicago. And even though it seems like maybe this was Secret Service, it's a bit unclear exactly what's going on, I think, to us. But it does just show that this is a really stressful time for tens of thousands of families who are worried that this is something that could maybe even come to their school.
Well, and this is a student population that is primarily Latino. Dan, as we've talked about, community on edge, the city and the state, and frankly, a lot of community members as well, really trying to get out in front of situations like this.
Yeah, I mean, one thing CPS has said specifically to schools, because there was a time when schools and churches were sort of off limits. Remember when some undocumented people would seek shelter in various churches in Chicago and elsewhere in the country. But now it seems like everything is on the table. Stephen Miller was on TV. It was specifically about these reports from Chicago, and he said there is no sanctuary in America. He said that, the reason that they can go to schools, he surmised, without, I think, specifically addressing Chicago, was child trafficking, for instance. But CPS has said that unless somebody has a warrant, they've been instructed, principals at every school, to not engage, and so they're offering this sort of support, but obviously Chicago has been a target. They said, Tom Holman was here, right? It was just last month, a border czar and sort of immigration honcho for Trump said that they would start in Chicago. There were reports in credible media like the Wall Street Journal that they planned to start the day after the inauguration, meaning this past Tuesday. That obviously didn't happen to that extent. Let's remember, though, there have been deportations. They used to call Obama the deporter in chief. There have been raids and immigration enforcement in Democratic and Republican administrations. There have been ebbs and flows, but they've specifically said mass deportations in this administration and targets blue cities, Chicago foremost.
Lynn, let's bring you in, because as Dan indicated, it's not like the President Trump invented deportations. However, he certainly made this a hallmark of his campaign, going back to his campaign when he first ran for president. So is this his trying to really sort of use the bully pulpit, as he does so effectively, to become the deporter in chief, because he wants that title? Or is this something that you think he's actually going to carry out and putting resources behind?
Oh, there's no doubt that he that President Trump is serious about clamping down on immigration. He already has sent U.S. military to the southern border. He effectively entered he has sealed the border for all practical purposes, ended asylum. We have yet to see what he will do in terms of actually sending agents to schools or churches. They don't see this as off limits. So I don't think he cares to get the title of deporter in chief. I would be surprised if he claimed he is by the end of his first week in office.
Olivia, let's go to you, because we've talked about how there is no such thing as sanctuary in the eyes of the Trump administration, and yet Illinois and Chicago very much consider themselves to be sanctuary cities and have laws, and in the case of Chicago, an ordinance to that effect. We have the Department of Justice threatening to investigate and perhaps prosecute individuals, so leaders like perhaps the governor, even, if they get in the way of raids. What has Pritzker said about this?
Yeah, I mean, Illinois does have like a pretty clear law about this, saying that there cannot be that sort of cooperation except in very specific instances between state authorities and federal ones on immigration enforcement. Pritzker, throughout this entire week, and I think the mayor as well, have been very clear that that's their stance. They are not going to be cooperating with ICE in any capacity, really, as these rumors are swirling around. The governor has said, I'm going to protect the people. I'm going to protect my people. He's mentioned, that he's going to protect families who he says are law-abiding, even as he continues to say, an undocumented immigrant who's convicted of a violent crime should be deported. He's very clear that for basically all others, he wants to follow the Illinois law and protect them from these threats.
And what we're seeing today is the very reason why the Chicago Teachers Union in 2019 pushed to ratify CPS laws to where schools are granted sanctuary status so that they can hold ICE agents potentially at the door, as was or may have not happened today. So we're seeing the implications of why that was put forward in place.
Lynn, you wanted to jump in.
Okay, here's the thing. I think that with all due respect to our sanctuary laws, remember that no one is standing in the way of a lawful arrest and eventual deportation. Now, the borders are, you mentioned, Tom Holman also said that, okay, if they can't get into the jail, and now if the schools, churches won't let them in, and if they know who they're looking for, not only would they take that person, and I'm not sure exactly how this could work, if they find other people who are undocumented with the person they're looking for, they will take them. So I think we have to think of this and conceptualize that this is a test of just not of the words our leaders in Chicago and the state of Illinois are saying, but it might be a test of a law why someone already is taken into custody. I think this is a very grave situation, and the fear that we are that you're reporting on throughout Chicago and the immigration community is probably exactly what the Trump administration wants in case some people just want to leave on their own. So part of what we're talking about in a sense already helps the anti-immigration effort, because if you're listening to us and you have a status and you're undocumented and you're thinking of leaving, this is all part of, I think, the atmosphere that the Trump administration is trying to create. Just think, we have not had a mass raid in Chicago that we were supposed to be ground zero, and look at the concern, fear, and anxiety in our community.
And it just continues and prevails. And if you really key in, I think, on some of the words of our leaders, there's a lot of, we're not going to interfere. And it's that local police and state police cannot help ICE agents, but not necessarily that they'll stand in the way.
And there are also threats. Lynn could tell you more about from Washington, from Trump particularly, and Holman, to say that people that are protecting them, including maybe the mayor, who says he's not afraid, or the governor and people like that will be targeted for not cooperating. But, you know, again, how that actually remains to be carried out is something we haven't seen. That is why
Pritzker is very careful, and I think the mayor, and I've talked to both of them in the last week on this, no one is standing in the way of a lawful arrest. And therefore, it doesn't mean that everybody's protected. If there are, yeah, so maybe this is the calm before the storm. We don't know. But if
it is definitely a new era.
Agents, yeah.
Let me stick with you, Lynn. Sorry, Lynn, I wanted to stick with you because for those of us in Illinois, what is the atmosphere like in Washington? You know, you've covered many presidential inaugurations, yeah. And outside of the weather, of course, which brought this indoors, what made this so different than others?
Well, this is a split screen. When I last Saturday night, I went to a reception hosted by the Illinois Republican Party, and everybody was exuberant. But then you talk to, I live in a very Democratic area here. People are downbeat, especially when you see how fast the executive orders have come, especially dealing with trying to take apart government. So I would say basically, and even in the day of inauguration, if you're a Democrat, you are feeling a sense of despair. If you're a Republican, this is joyful exhilaration.
And some members of the Illinois delegation, the Democrats, were staying home, not going to the inauguration proceedings, maybe because they had Martin Luther King Day events. Maybe they didn't want to be there.
I provided a convenient excuse. I talked to the offices of all 14 Democrats. And, out of the 17-member delegation, and the majority of them did not come to the inauguration. And most of them were at Martin Luther King Day activities.
I'm going to go to Brandon here because, while they might not have been there, some tech titans did. They got this front row, practically, seat. Why were they there? This is something that the governor himself, a billionaire, by the way, has pointed out to say that he believes this is an oligarchy.
Yeah, a lot of discussion about that. Why were they there? I think the simple answer is they have curried favor with the now President Donald Trump, even taking meetings at Mar-a-Lago, which has been called the Florida White House in a sense, and rolling back and changing policies and algorithms based off that. And I think this is concerning.
But Trump is supposed to be a populist.
He's supposed to be a populist, and he's pro-free speech, they say, but you're already seeing some concerns from users about certain search terms and things being censored, they think, from them. And algorithms, what they show you, what they don't. Is that censorship? It just raises a lot more concerns, especially when you really only have two people owning all the social media that we're utilizing at this point that's popular.
Dan, you want to weigh in there?
Yeah, I mean, the right has gone from whining that Twitter, as it was called back then, and Facebook were too much against them. And I think we have the same complaint now from the left. Certainly, I do think that with Elon Musk in charge of changing it to X, also Zuckerberg, Mark Zuckerberg from Meta, which is, you know, essentially Facebook and Instagram, they were there, as was another of the biggest oligarchs,
Jeff Bezos,
yeah, and Amazon, and the Washington Post now becoming changing, I guess, its logo and its motto.
I think the concern really here is if you have all of social media, which people are consuming more for news than ever before. Sorry to say, everybody, it's not great for us.
We can say stories. We give them the fodder.
Exactly, but they're getting their news from social media and social media users mostly. So if your algorithms are tailoring only information curated by whoever is in whatever dark room, how do we know they're getting reliable information or the information that's most needed? Because what journalism is about is challenging power, asking questions. How can we be certain that's going to be happening over the next 4 years if Meta algorithm is tailored for this or that?
Lynn, go ahead and jump in there. And if you want to touch on, I know you reported some on Musk.
Yeah, I mean, this has been going on for years now in terms of how people get information. And the what is different now is that we have a president who condones who does not believe in reporting. He does not believe and he makes false claims. That is what's different. We've known for years that people consume information in a lot of ways, which is why we at the Sun-Times and WBEZ have multiple platforms that we use to try and tell you and
we're
give
all
out
doing
the content.
What we can.
Yeah, you know, Olivia. But I think don't get distracted here ourselves. The leadership atop having President Trump, who wants it this way, is what has changed. And you have now powerful people who run the levers of these of the social networks listening to him. That's the difference.
Sort of sycophants, some would say. Olivia, I want to go to you. There has been this flurry of executive orders that the president issued. One of these would put an end to giving citizenship to individuals who have a baby if that are not legal citizens of the United States. Illinois took action. Where does that stand?
Yeah, so Illinois was one of 22 states that sued over this birthright citizenship order. I mean, I think this order really just struck a nerve with a lot of states and a lot of organizations. Even some expectant women sued over this, just because birthright citizenship is, I think many people think such an integral part of American life. And this week, a federal judge decided to put a temporary restraining order on this based on the suit that Illinois was involved in. So that happened yesterday. I think it's like a two-week restraining order that can be extended. So it won't be implemented for now. The judge seemed to agree with the arguments that it was likely unconstitutional based on the 14th Amendment. We'll see. Trump has already said, yes, we're definitely going to appeal this. So it seems like it's a bit of a long road ahead. But
headed perhaps to the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, Dan, with about 10 minutes left, we've got lots to get in here. I want to make sure and hone in on this, because the president also issued blanket pardons to anybody who was involved with January 6th, despite the hint that maybe those who were more violent would not get a pardon. That, in fact, did not happen. That includes about 50 individuals from Illinois. Give us a sense of what some of the individuals who were either accused or in cases convicted had partaken in. What activities?
Yeah, it's quite a varied group in the sense of they come from different walks of life. We had a Chicago cop. We had a retired firefighter. We had a business executive from the Northwest suburbs, from I think Inverness. A lot of different sorts of things that they had been, 43 of those 53, by the way, were already convicted and sentenced before Trump was sworn in, and then a few hours later issued this sort of blanket pardon and also voided any cases that were in the process still, and there were a few of those. But yes, some of these folks did commit violence. We're seeing it on the screen right now. We've all seen it before, and they were identified. They were there was strong evidence. Some of them were sentenced. Some of them faced long sentences. Some of them already have served their time.
The Chicago police officer wants his job back?
Yeah.
A chance of
I mean, you lose your firearm owner identification card, I guess, when you're convicted. He went to trial and he lost. But his lawyer told me that he thought it was a witch hunt, echoing, obviously, Trump's own description of the prosecutions against him. And he thinks that now, if he gets his FOID card back, why shouldn't he get his job back as a Chicago police officer? And, you know, he and his sister were convicted in J6.
Something that I'm sure you will be keeping an eye on. Lynn, let's go back to you, because on the subject of pardons, President Biden also, of course, took heavy pardon action before he left office. And you, I believe, spoke with former Illinois Congressman Adam Kinzinger, who said he didn't want one, but might he be thankful, given his role trying to defeat Trump this election and on the January 6th investigatory committee?
Well, his position is he doesn't need to accept it. He didn't seek it, but he did.
But
say
he's accepting it.
No, you don't have to. He stands not in the head of a pin. Okay, so the point is, his view is he doesn't have to accept it. It's not like he has to sign a piece of paper. That's the impression I have, saying, you know, I've accepted it. But he did, you know, if you don't take it, you may have a lot of money in legal fees if somebody does come after you. And that's a practical consideration, hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees or none. But the pardons are still coming out. The president today pardoned, I think it was today or late last night, pardoned some people who have been involved in anti-abortion protests. And they broke the law in the way they did the protests where they were pardoned today. Today is National Right to Life Day. So this is something that we're going to see. Usually presidents wait a little bit before they issue pardons. This may be an ongoing feature of the Trump presidency.
You know, Dan, we talked to you briefly about this particular Chicago police officer who was involved in January 6th. You've also done some reporting on one who was wearing an extremist mask during some of the protests following George Floyd's murder. And now he's getting a reprimand for that.
Yeah.
Why only a reprimand?
Yeah, Kyle Mangari was the officer who, back in the summer of 2020, was at a racial justice protest on duty, patrolling this event just a few days after the George Floyd incidents here in Chicago in June of 2020, wearing a mask of a group called the Three Percenters, which is like the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys, one of these right-wing militias. In the end, you know, he got photographed wearing that. But even so, it's taken 5 years and the pressure from the Inspector General of City Government, Deborah Witzberg, before the two investigations before the Chicago Police Department gave him the crushing penalty of a reprimand, which I think is about the lightest slap on the wrist that they can give. Even so, it's only, I think, the second time that any cop has been reprimanded or disciplined at all, I should say, for associations with extremism, even though we had a number of Chicago police officers, something like 27 current and former officers that we found who were on the membership rolls of the Oath Keepers, for instance. So CPD has really struggled to respond to this in a way that people like.
Tell me if I'm out of bounds here, but didn't that officer say he wasn't aware that what he was wearing was part of a white supremacist thing?
Well, he didn't join the Three Percenters, we should say, and that he thought it was a patriotic item. That's what he said when he was interviewed by Internal Affairs at the CPD.
So I could actually see that being believable, that people wouldn't actually know. So should there be some sort of training for police officers out there about these extremist groups?
Yeah, that's one of the recommendations from the IG, certainly. But, you know, you're a police officer and you're associating with something and you can't, you know, you're supposed to be investigating crimes.
Yeah.
This guy's in the gang investigations unit, so he can't figure out what it is he's wearing. I mean, you could put any logo into the computer, and I'll tell you what it is.
Google it, as some might say. So this is going through a different process than, of course, the court of law. Olivia, closing arguments this week in the trial against former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan. The defense got going today, but the prosecution had really their turn, and they said that the government depends on your cynicism was the defense, the prosecution. Give us your takeaway here.
Yeah, I mean, that was really the argument that they were trying to make, that maybe Michael Madigan, or as they called him throughout the trial, Mike, is just a normal guy, and these are just a bunch of things that are being strung together unfairly. I mean, whether the jurors will believe that, I mean, they were kind of selected for a lack of knowledge on Illinois politics, as I know it has been discussed on this show before, but it's really
trying to hammer in, it seems, on Madigan's willingness to work with former alderman Solis after he should have been radioactive for saying the quiet part out loud, for saying quid pro quo.
Magic word.
It's right there.
So perhaps the jury will begin talking next week. Before we go, we've got to talk about the new Bears coach, Brandon.
Oh, man.
So it's my understanding that people were really, that he's a wanted man, that other teams
are
so in demand. Why did he want to come to Bears?
By Bears fans, exactly. Well, look, he's the former Lions offensive coordinator. We've just seen the Lions have a historic season. He did great things with Jared Goff at quarterback, and so many people thinking Caleb Williams, great quarterback, Ben Johnson. And he's been flirting with the idea in public comments for a while. Caleb Williams doing the same thing. So it feels like a match made in heaven. He won the press conference by many people's opinions. Everyone wins the press conference. Can he actually win games is going to be the question. There's been doubts about whether the fit works, because he's a guy, not to get too in the weeds, but he wants his quarterbacks to play in structure, and Caleb Williams is a guy who likes to play out of structure. Can he reel Caleb Williams in? Still a lot of talent there, lots to develop. Many people thinking there's optimism there. So we're going to see what happens. We've been through this drill before as Bears fans, right? New coach comes in, new hope comes in, and then it's quickly dashed.
Hope springs eternal.
Sure,
we shall see what Coach Ben Johnson does. With that, we are our game clock has run out. Thanks to Dan Mihalopoulos, Brandon Pope, Olivia Olander, and Lynn Sweet. We will be back to wrap things up right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
And that is our show for this Friday night. You can stream The Week in Review and Chicago Tonight on our WTTW YouTube channel every evening. You can also catch up on any programs that you may have missed. Now, for The Week in Review, I'm Amanda Vinicky. Thanks for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night. All right, so Brandon, something else that got attention this week. Majority of members of the city council are upset and asking that an art display at the Cultural Center be taken down. They're offended.
Yeah, because they believe, some are calling it anti-Semitic. Some believe its comments on the Israel-Palestine issue are too divisive. It's also raising free speech issues. It's a public art display, and art usually is meant to challenge sometimes ideas we may not agree with. So it's just another big discussion around a hot button issue. It's interesting, of those aldermen, those 27 that signed on to this letter, some of them, they said.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that supports free educational initiatives in the legal profession.